paper 18, section 6, which is old single column, page 212. All right. So we got these last two little sections. And just quickly, a little reminder. If you can't remember, we're going down through the of days, quote-unquote beings, which includes the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy at the top. And, we having made it down to the recents of days, the previous section, you've made it all the way down through the super universe, the three levels of the super universe domain, the super universe proper. Now we're about to go into the, the little universe within the universe, into the local universe level. And there's obviously going to be an interface between those two universes. You have two domains that have a degree of integrity that allows them to function pretty much within what they are. That's why they're a universe, one turning. And so, in a very definitive way, when you've got two domains that, have this quasi-island universe, quote-unquote, character, quasi-self-contained character, you're going to need a very definitive link there. Well, when you're going down through the three levels in the super universe, it's all within. It's much more direct, immediate, the connection between those three. But, especially in ways that we can't really understand totally, there's going to have to be some definitive linkage between the super universe and the local universe that brings those two together as one. So it's not surprising. So you're just thinking like that before you read anything, what the title is, what these beings are going to be called. They're going to be very integral in bringing these two universes together into one unum, one union. E pluribus unum.
Okay? E pluribus union.
Yeah. All right, so just, I'm always wanting to encourage you to do your best at every turn to see if you can know what's coming and why. Try to be thinking with the relevers. Try to get yourself in there, and making sense out of it even before you dig through it. Okay, let's jump in.
Section 6, the unions of days. The Trinity personalities of the order of days do not function in an administrative capacity below the level of the super universe governments. In the evolving local universes, they act only as counselors and advisors. The unions of days are a group of liaison personalities accredited by the Paradise Trinity to the dual rulers of the local universes. Each organized and inhabited local universe has assigned to it one of these Paradise Counselors who acts as the representative of the Trinity and in some respects of the Universal Father to the local creation.
Okay. Now, that last little part should have gotten you a little question mark forming in your mind. So, we've been very definitively understanding what was going on, these Trinity origin beings. And then they throw that little twist in there. And in some respects, of the Universal Father. Well, how can I understand that? How can I understand what's going on there? Well, there's another little curious thing embedded in there, that word liaison. Do you notice that? And I said that the unions of days are a group of liaison personalities accredited by the Paradise Trinity. They haven't stated it like that before. What are they getting at? The Paradise Trinity, you know, has fine-tuned something here, it appears, so that there's this very intimate coming together as one. You know, that's that word liaison. That's a very intimate word. So let's see if we can understand, based on what we know about the relationship between the Trinity and the rest of the existential deity there on Paradise. You have those four existential facts. We have the Paradise Trinity, and we have the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. Or maybe in this mode, if we're really thinking about relationship to the Paradise Trinity, that's not a person, maybe we should just say the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. You know, just think about the deity of the three in relationship to the Paradise Trinity. You know, we've talked about this recognition that when you bring in the higher perspective in the revelation, you have what's called the universal one of infinity. And it's a very different fact than a number of all those other higher facts that you start talking about when you bring in total deity, things like the infinite capacity or what have you. In that universal one of infinity, we talk about, has two sides. I mean, what's on the two sides? Or if you look at each of the two sides, what do you see? If you look at the universal one of infinity from one side, you see an individuality that we call the Paradise Trinity. If you turn it around and look at it on the other side, you look at the universal one of infinity from that perspective, you see something very different. You see the root of the Father. You see the first center. So, if we're talking about the relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, which is the most immediate? The Father's right there. I mean, you know, through Paradise, as it were, the Paradise Trinity and the root of the Father, the first center, are connected, directly connected. Okay? There's a liaison between the root of the Father and the Paradise Trinity. Okay. So, yeah?
But there being a root of the Father implies that there's something antecedent to the Father.
Exactly. From a top-down point of view, you do think of the Paradise Trinity as being antecedent. You know, I mean, you think of sort of the pre-Paradise Trinity, and it divests itself of what it can—the Father, the Son, and the Spirit—and then the pure Paradise Trinity remains undivided deity. You know, from that top-down point of view, it's the other way around. You don't start with, basically the infinite one perspective, or even deeper. You don't really start from so much of an I am perspective. You start from an all are perspective.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the Paradise Trinity that's intimate with the all are. Okay. So we know that there is this very close relationship. And so when we see this, it's like, that's probably not a coincidence that the two things that are mentioned there that be in play are the Paradise Trinity, acts as a representative of the Paradise Trinity, and in some respects of the Universal Father. Okay, well, if you think about the details of the Father, literally, the Universal Father is a couple steps removed from the first center. You start at the root of the Father, the first center. You go out one notch, you have the first source. You go out another notch, and you have the Universal Father. Okay, so it's not going to be directly the universal father, but in some respects, the root of the universal father, see, is intimate with the paradise trinity. Okay, so now, okay, so we can see that there's a sort of a theoretical, at least, potential. Why would this really be in play here? Well, I mean, couldn't I say this of the reasons of days, the perfections of days, I mean, et cetera? Why is it so in play here? You know, see, it accredited by the person, the Paradise Trinity. Like we said, there's something very specific that the Paradise Trinity has in mind here, engaging the dual leadership of the local universe level. Okay, so let's think about that. We have two beings that are leading the local universe level. We have a creator son and a creative mother spirit. The type of deity that goes into a creator son is father hyphen son type deity. The foundation is son, the son type deity. That's why it's called a creator son, not a creator father. Okay, that's the foundation. So it's the son. And then added to that, you know, built upon that foundation, is father type deity. Father hyphen son. Okay. The other being, creative mother spirit, again, it has this twofold together as one deity nature. Spirit hyphen mother. Spirit type deity and mother type deity together as one. The foundation is the mother, with spirit added on top of that. And it's like, well, wait, that's kind of confusing. When we talk about the creative mother spirit, we talk about this evolution where initially it's a creative spirit, just spirit-type deity, and then there's the primary eruption, and the mother-type deity gets added on. Shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't it be mother hyphen spirit instead of spirit hyphen mother? Remember what we talked about. It's very important when you, in order to really begin to understand the relationship of mother type deity to our, you know, sort of temporal experience, you have to bring in a top down point of view. See, so think of it in a top, in a downwelling process. So initially there's spirit deity, and then added on to that, further down, is mother type deity. So, from our bottom-up point of view, the mother deity is at the bottom, spirit at the top. Okay. You can only really understand, you know, their direct statement that it's spirit hyphen mother type deity, not the other way around. If you view it from the top down, that's the only way that's logical. It's not logical bottom-up. You need to see it top-down. So, here we have it. So, we have father-son and spirit mother. So if sort of the foundation is the son, and then maybe you can think of a father wrapped around that, added on to that, the union of days engages that creator son. He brings his Trinity origin nature into an intimate relationship with that. What's the face? What's he's immediately touching? The father. It's just like they're describing as the universal one of infinity. There's a, in a sense, the union of days, you know, is reflecting this intimate relationship that can occur right there immediately at the level where it's at. This creator son with this father type deity. There's a reflection. In a sense, he reflects a little bit of that father-like nature, in some respects, of the universal father. And he needs to do that. He needs to sort of have a reflection, a resonance with that father deity, not only to have an intimate relation and to have this very definitive link of what's above with these of-days beings plugging into the local universe level, but when Michael's gone, a lot of times he, you know, really kind of takes the place. There has to be a father-like face, see? So it's this very intimate liaison potential of Trinity nature to Father nature that not only facilitates that relationship, the intimacy of that relationship, but allows him to function when in Michael Stead to a degree. Okay. Well, think about the other relationship. It's just as infinite. I mean, Trinity nature underlies the mother. And we've talked about that. Mother deity really stems from that source point, that side of the original. That mother deity originates from the Paradise Trinity. Trinity nature underlies the mother. So now just the union of days aside for a second, just think again about the relationship between a Creator Son and a Creator Mother Spirit. And we talk about how they're so coordinate, how they're so close, how they're so together as one in this dual leadership. How do they really intimately connect one to another and function as one? The Father aspect of the Creator Son connects to the Mother aspect of the Creative Mother Spirit through the Paradise Trinity presence. That's the link that binds. The Paradise Trinity is the link that binds the two together. Father nature to Mother nature come together as one through the Paradise Trinity. That's the Creator Son and Creative Mother Spirit's liaison space is the presence of the Paradise Trinity. And who's there? Right there in that liaison, this union of days. So he's very much plugged into their union because of his Trinity nature. He has an interface to the Mother on one side, Father on the other side. And, of course, he's an of days being, and so he's intimately connected to the next notch up, the reasons, the days, and everything above that. So, see, it's all very tightly plugged together, connected together. He's very much like a bridge in this whole system. So just to think about it that intimately, that's what they're demanding. The fact that they didn't just speak and kind of, he sits over here in another building and occasionally they ask him for advice or something like that. I mean, they use the word liaison. Okay. That there isn't any more intimate word. So they're challenging you to think this through like this and understand in a whole new, very literal way how this system works. All right, so there's what you have. I mean, so, they're about to give you some reason why they said unions of days. But as always, they're not going to give you what they want you to discover, all that deeper stuff that only you appreciate when you get into total deity and mother deity and bringing that additional in. All right, let's read some more.
Can I just ask real quick?
Yep.
We're talking about Emmanuel.
About Emmanuel, yeah. And so, of course, God with us, them choosing to use that name Emmanuel to as a proper name for this individual rather than, Michael. Has a lot to do with this last statement here, and in some respects of the Universal Father. Is a little bit of, because when you have that Hebrew name, Emmanuel, God with us, I mean, the God you're talking about there is God the Father, okay, of course. That's between the lines there, even though they're not immediately stating it here, of why they felt that was an appropriate use of that name. They could have chosen to just not use Emmanuel at all. And they certainly didn't use it any way that you might think that they would use it based upon historical use of that name. To use it for the Union of Days is kind of a historical non sequitur. Okay. But
why did they?
But it's just, it's because of this. They want to, he's the Union of Days. And there is this reflective face of the Father You know, like you said, you might even want, you know, you could think of it that Michael is reflected off of the union of days, you know, and he was seen, him as seen the Father, so that reflection is going to be Father-like, okay? And it's going to, there's going to be a measure of God with us. And see, so again, this of days being has this resonance because it's there with a Creator Son. It's not above a Creator Son or below a Creator Son. It's right there and in reflective resonance on that level with it, intimate with it.
There are several 700,000 of these beings in existence, though they have not all been commissioned. The reserve corps of the Union of Days functions on Paradise as the Supreme Council of Universe Adjustments.
We won't comment on that, but you might wonder why did they make that a paragraph unto itself. We'll figure that out when we read the next section.
In a special manner, these Trinity observers coordinate the administrative activities of all branches of the universal government, from those of the local universes up through the sector governments to those of the super universe, hence their name, Unions of Days. They make a threefold report to their superiors. They report pertinent data of a physical and semi-intellectual nature to the recents of days of their minor sector. They report intellectual and quasi-spiritual happenings to the perfections of days of their major sector. They report spiritual and
paradisiacal
matters to the ancients of days at the capital of their super universe.
Okay. So like I said, there's a little bit about justifying the union of day, but we sort of went even beyond that and already. So let's just talk about that last part. Notice the fun little exercise and language they have there. So reporting up to the three different levels, you know, and we know he's reporting up to the individuality level, the associativity level, and the unity level as you go up in the super universe. You know, so you certainly see that pretty immediately. Okay, go up to the individuality level, and we see physical. Okay, that's yeah. Straightforward.
Yeah.
That's individuality, substance, and energy, individuality, energy, semi-intellectual. Okay, well now, notice that it says intellectual, not say mindal or mental or whatnot. Okay, it's definitely, but it's invoking the associative by saying intellectual. So it's like, wait a minute, I thought we were talking about individuality. Well, the associativity domain has two endpoints. Right? And especially if you say intellectual rather than mental, you're focusing on the higher part of the associative. So in a sense, kind of the other half, semi, you know, the lower half that's more individuality-like. So he's reporting up things that are very directly about individuality and those that are, you know, very much in, they're associative but very much individuality-like, you know. So that whole individuality end of the energy spectrum is going up there. Okay, and then you go up a notch. Okay, now it's definitively intellectual. So it's, you know, definitively associative. You know, you might even, when you say energy, mind, and matter, you know, on paper 42, see, we've moved, you know, we're not going to be thinking about this in any real direct mindal energy sense. When he's reporting up to the perfections of days, it's going to be much, you know, much more of a, an issue of associativity in and of itself, separate from the energy issue. Or another way we've seen this when we're trying to talk about mind and all of its complexities, it's not so much the mind energy, which was at the minor sector level, it's the mind activity. Remember when we talked about that, how there's two things in play and there's two different sources? So not so, the lower level is, another way to think about it is, what's coming from, when you're thinking of the universal absolute, is the reservoir for mind energy. So that's at the minor sector level, that kind of an issue. But if you're talking about this activity, this mind activity, it comes from the reservoir of the infinite mind. That's more what we're talking about here. That's what the perfection of days wants to know about. That activity, not so much the foundation underneath that activity of the mind energy. Okay, so that's, and then they say quasi-spiritual. Because of course, on the, you know, the high end, the unity end of the associativity or the, of mind, you know, it's coming into relationship with the unity of spirit. Okay, it's not literally unity, but it's quasi, it's unity-like. Okay. It has a sense of that, you know, that unity, and not, you know, and it's well removed from individuality issues. So he's going to report that too at that level. The, you know, the first shades of unity, as well as directly associativity, and then go up to the highest. Now, what does he report all the way up to the Ancients of Days? Spiritual and semi-paradisiacal. How do we understand that? We were talking about the Ancients of Days and stuff, that you have that super universe headquarters level, that unity level, but this is a limited unity. Right? You take the spiritual unity of the central universe and you reflect it out through the seven master spirits into a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, or, you know, a downstep, a qualified unity in each of the super universes. So that first one, spiritual, in other words, stuff that's directly related to the flavor of unity in the super universe you're talking about, but also things that have shades of the higher unity. Okay, now why did they word that semi-paradisiacal? Well, think about that relationship between the Isle of Paradise and the central universe, especially Havona. Kind of in the same way we were talking about the intellectual and their use of semi-intellectual. This, the central universe relative to paradise, literally, directly, is semi-paradisiacal. Right? Especially if you're thinking, you know, the most removed, the Havona part of the central universe. Okay. So that's why they're saying it that way. To think of the central universe as having a character that's semi-paradisiacal is another way of talking about what the unity is like there. Now, obviously, there is an even higher unity, you know, in an absolute sense, it's paradisiacal directly. Okay, but that's not in play here. Okay, so that's, they really wanted you to spend a whole bunch of time trying to sort out why they chose all these words and what that all means, and really, you know, just be able to think through.
Is that semi-paradisiacal? Is that a once word?
It might,
I looked it up in Google.
Probably
it,
is.
And I looked it mentioned up in Google, it. And it refers back to this particular paragraph in the Urantia book.
I don't recall it anywhere else. It probably is a once word in this section. I mean, can't say that for absolutely certain, but yeah, it probably is. Probably
that's what Google refers it back to, is this paragraph, and that's it. There's no other reference to it.
Say semi-paradisiacal, so what measure of non-perfection do they allow?
In a perfect place.
Yeah.
Right, see, there's perfect and then there's perfect. I mean, again, you know, perfection is a relative term. A spirit-fused mortal is inducted into the Nebadon core of perfection when they ascend up to Salvington, in our case. Yeah, but we're a You know, but that's not perfection relative to us. We're not, you know, at a similar stage until we get to paradise. Yeah. So perfection is a relative term. I mean, even the perfection we have when we get to paradise is still very, very, that's just finite perfection. We've got an infinite amount of perfection to go yet. Yeah. You're not even remotely close to absolute perfection, even the first of the four stages of absolute perfection. Yeah.
We're still hairy.
Yeah. So, but it is kind of fun to actually use that such a, you know, a literal fraction-like prefix of semi, you know, talking about
there's perfection.
Paradise, you know. All right. But, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, it sort of forces you, because of the juxtaposition of semi-intellectual, to, in the same way that you think of, you know, the mindal domain as being this continuum that, you know, goes from distinct individuality at one end to a distinct unity at the other end and has everything in between. You know, to think of the central universe as having a gradation like that, too, see? You know, where there's an outer, you know, boundary that directly interfaces with stuff out here, and there's an inner boundary that directly interfaces with the Isle of Paradise, and everything, you know, continuously in between those two interfaces is within there. All right, yeah, more.
Since they are Trinity origin beings, all of the Paradise circuits are available to them for intercommunication, and thus are they always in touch with each other and with all other required personalities up to the Supreme Councils of Paradise.
Just the totality attitude, yeah, is in play there. Oh, maybe just, yeah, it's only a minute. You notice the beginning of the previous paragraph, again, saying coordinate, you know, that these Trinity observers coordinate the administrative activities. And we have this coordinate action of Trinity nature. They keep mentioning it over and over again, showing you different ways that functioning of the Paradise Trinity coordinate action is expressed. You know, there's not just one flavor of coordinate action. There's a number of different flavors of coordinate action. And there's a number of different flavor of totality attitude. That's why even when they're talking about the functioning of the Paradise Trinity, they say totality attitudes. Remember, they make that plural. Just by making that plural, that reminds you that the other have a plurality to them as well. You know, there's a coordinate action relative to a particular totality attitude, and different coordinate action relative to yet, you know, different totality attitude, etc.
A union of days is not organically connected with the government of the local universe of his assignment. Aside from his duties as an observer, he acts only at the request of the local authorities. He is an ex officio member of all primary councils and all important conclaves of the local creation, but he does not participate in the technical consideration of administrative problems.
Yeah, so just, you know, ex officio, you know, because of the nature of his office. I mean, what exactly nature specifically is so, you know, makes it so matter of fact that he's on all these different committees and stuff. You know, it's that in some respects of the Universal Father, you know, it's this very close relationship, you know, brother to brother, quote unquote, is the way they refer to it, Emmanuel to Michael. Okay, that makes it just so automatic that he's going to be, you know, on these different boards. Yeah, I mean, obviously Michael would be, you know, no one would think, well, you know, something that's outside of Michael's, you know, so it's the same thing. Yeah, that's just why they're, what they're, you know, and notice that again, they don't spoon feed that. They want you to, you know, figure out why, you know, because of his office.
When a local universe is settled in light and life, its glorified beings associate freely with the union of days, who then functions in an enlarged capacity in such a realm of evolutionary perfection. But he is still primarily a Trinity ambassador and a paradise counselor. A local universe is directly ruled by a divine son of dual deity origin, but he has constantly by his side a paradise brother, a Trinity origin personality. In the event of the temporary absence of a creator son from the headquarters of his local universe, the acting rulers are largely guided in their major decisions by the council of their union of days.
Okay, so just two things to stress. You notice they say it directly there, dual deity origin, father hyphen son, hyphen deity. Yeah. You know, and now just stress it. See, when they, for them to say that, you know, here directly, a paradise brother, you know. You know, you've been reading that for years, if you've been reading the Aranja book, you know, and the whole Emmanuel, my, Jesus referring to my brother, and to understand in what sense Michael sees Emmanuel as his brother. You know, what is the closeness dimension? Okay? They touch each other as brothers through the universal one of infinity. That's what they have in common. That's what makes them brothers. The Creator Son is on one side of the Universal One and Infinity, and the Union of Days is on the other side. Okay? Universal One. Okay? They're brothers. They're kin. They're one through the fact of the Universal One and Infinity. Okay? You know, that's, you know, something that is just not immediately obvious at all. But they say that over and over again, and they never explain. Well, it's like, well, why, you know, Trinity origin, Father's son, why are they so? I guess it's just because they both came from paradise. You know, you know, it's more, you know, it's got to be more than that. You always want to try to figure out literally, you know. It's not just a simple associative thing ever. It's always a nature issue. There's some literalness that you can understand these statements by, and that's what it is.
Is the creator aspect by fiat, or is it by other, through other agencies, through the life carriers and all of that?
Well, I mean, it's embedded at the core of their nature, you know, in when they're brought into existence. You know, you just as a way to, you know, kind of even appreciate how much, how kind of deeply mysterious the ability to create is. We've got creator sons, okay, and we know they have father type deities. It's like, well, okay, so that seems pretty straightforward. I'm certainly willing to think that because of that close connection to the Father, that they could be a creator. Okay, but an ancient of days is also a creator. Okay, and there's no father deity there. Or son deity or spirit deity. Yeah, it's Trinity origin. Oh, but there is this intimacy again, like we were just talking about. This, you know, the other way around. You know, the Creator Son gets the Father nature out right out in front where everyone can see it. The Father's hand reaches out and bestows it right in front of everyone's eyes. It's on the front side of the Father that that's happening. But there's a back door. Okay? The Father has a linkage that's invisible, that's inside of the Universal One of Infinity, to the Paradise Trinity. And there, so there's an avenue for creator nature to come out, you know, and it obviously does in the Ancients of Days, and they're called the Super Fathers. That, just the fact that they, you know, that they label them the Super Fathers. See, that's not just figurative. Again, you got to, okay, so how is that literally possible? How could they have this into such immediate intimacy with Father Nature that they could be called the Super Fathers? Oh yeah, and by the way, they are creators too. That's kind of the same question, isn't it? It's this little secret sort of that's hidden within the Universal One of Infinity, this connection.
And there always must be a companion mother element before the creation can happen. They don't just say, bam, be, and it is. There has to be a substrate.
Right, right. And then there's always that other side of the story that you have to bring into. I mean, there's no way for the Father and the Son to create a Creator Son without, a womb for that Creator Son to come into existence in. You know, he doesn't float in the vacuum. He's in a womb of some sort. There's always mother, within which all this occurs. Yeah. And so you can think about that other aspect of it as well. And, and I've alluded, you don't always, when we say, we said a number of times, when we see the word coordinate, that's a mother word. And we haven't been stressing that a lot because the Trinity is so much in front. But, remember, wherever there's Trinity, there's mother. Okay? And so whenever you're talking about, in a special manner, these Trinity observers, the Union of Days, coordinate in the administrative activities. There's more to that than the fact that they are Trinity origin and one of the functions of the Trinity is coordinate action. In the sense that they're this little focus point, this little tangible expression, localized expression of coordinate action, that again doesn't occur in a vacuum. They can only be that because they're upheld by a greater expression of coordinate action, a mother presence that they're enwombed in. So you can think of them as a condensation point of some greater mother presence that's always in play. Okay. But a lot of times it's not immediately relevant to the story. But don't forget, it's always there. There's always the creative mother spirit or the reflective mother spirits or, the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days or, the universal mother. I mean, there's always mother, and it's just always occurring at one of those levels of mother nature within that mother nature. Okay. Another way of saying that is they're not, you want to never think of these beings as sort of somehow being island universes, self-coordinating, they're a means for mother coordination to be expressed at a point, whereas mother is spread out. we got all the way to the end, didn't we? Meanwhile, back to the story. So that brother, we now have a way of more literally understanding the brotherness of a Creator Son and a Union of Days. It's through this deeply mysterious, intimate connection between the root of Father nature and the Paradise Trinity. All right, now the Faithfuls of Days.
Section 7, the Faithfuls of Days. These high Trinity origin personalities are the paradise advisors to the rulers of the 100 constellations in each local universe. There are 70 million faithfuls of days, and like the unions of days, not all are in service. Their paradise reserve corps is the Advisory Commission of Inter-Universe Ethics and Self-Government. Faithfuls of days rotate in service in accordance with the rulings of the Supreme Council of their reserve corps.
Okay, there's two little things there. First of all, here's where you discover why that second paragraph in the previous section is set off. That tiny little paragraph there where they mention the parallel thing about this Supreme Council of Universe Adjustments. So both the Unions of Days and the Faithfuls of Days have reserve corps because the seven super universes aren't fully developed. There are local universes and hence constellations that aren't even in existence yet. Okay, so there's a bunch of these Unions of Days and Faithfuls of Days that are waiting for their universe to come around, and they're waiting on paradise. And they have these reserved cores. Notice what's being said, you know, between the lines of the names. So let's start with the Faithful Zadays here. That reserve core, the Advisory Commission of Inter-Universe Ethics and Self-Government. Think about that in general terms. You know, the key that should get you going is inter. Wait a minute, inter, between. That's associative. And then self-government. So that council is overseeing the individuality of the local universes and the associativity between local universes. It's like, well, if I have individuality and associativity, where's the unity? Over here, you have the Supreme Council of Universe Adjustments. Supreme, that's the unity level. You know, all of the local universes as one. See, so that's what you've got. Between these two, they're dealing with the threefold actuality again. Unity with the unions of days, associativity, individuality. Relative to these little quasi-independent nuggets called local universes. Okay. So that's what's between the lines there. Then that last sentence. Faithful of the days rotate. Really? In service, in accordance with the rulings of the Supreme Council of their reserve corps. So they're not assigned to a particular constellation and boom, that's it. There's a rotation going on. It's like, well, are they like rotated within a local universe? You know, around within a local, well, maybe. But look what it says. It says Supreme Council. So in other words, the Supreme Council might say, okay, you Faithful of Days, you know, I want you over in that super universe now in this constellation. They could actually go anywhere around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
And another thing that when you get into unpacking the pattern universe, things you come to recognize is that when you get to the constellation level, it's a little different than the local universe headquarters level or the local system level. And we've seen that before, that you have the Ancients of Days connecting very directly with the Most Highs at the constellation level. But the Supreme Executives connect to the other two levels through their agents. Okay? So you have this difference between amongst the three levels. And you see the same thing when you understand the source pattern for this. The unity level and the individuality level, the super universe or the local universe headquarters level and the local system level really are a reflection of you have a central universe pattern that gets reflected out in seven different ways. But the constellation level is one to one. It's not one goes to seven. It's just seven goes to seven. Okay? And so it much more fundamentally is an all-way-around thing rather than, well, here's one fold of the sevenfold expression and here's another fold of the sevenfold. The constellation level has an all-the-way-around the seven superuniverses character that the other two levels don't. And remember what we said about the Ancients of Days have this uniform all the way around. And who do they directly connect with? The Most High, see? And they go all the way around too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so that even more fundamental fact would lead you to suspect, at least, that they could be assigned all the way around. Now, it's even more interesting. Okay, so remember when you go through the seven bestowals of Michael and you get post seventh bestowal, they in that paper 119 they talk a little bit about things, and they say, well, one of the things that happened is at that point, now that he's a master son, 2,000 years ago. The unions of days and faithfuls of days could have been relieved of duty. Michael said, no, I want you here. And they say that the faithfuls of days got permanently assigned. So the faithfuls of days that we have in our local universe now are here to stay. They're not going to get rotated out now. They've been permanently assigned. Okay, so they're not in this rotation anymore. Then there's even one juicier fact. When you're reading the Constellation paper, remember in the Constellation paper, there's a section about our faithful of days in the Relatia deck. Okay, this Mount Assembly, remember a little bit about that? And okay, they just casually slip in a little statement there, and they say that our faithful of days has always served here since Edentia was built. Whoa. He's never been rotated out, they tell you there. And you go, do you suppose it's a coincidence that a constellation that ended up experiencing a rebellion in one of its local systems had a faithful of days that's always been here? Very, very solid faithfulness right from the get-go. Yeah. That Supreme Council of their Reserve Corps, see, had a strong suspicion, obviously. Okay. They never rotated him out.
One of the three, he always stayed.
No, there's one faithful of days.
Okay.
The most high, have that complexity. Yeah. That one faithful of days has never been rotated out. And he's been around for a long time. It's not just because the last 2,000 years where now they're all staying. I mean, it says point blank that he's been here since it was built, since the Dentia was built. Okay, so that's an interesting little... that speaks to the name here. I wanted to really see the faithfuls of days. You know that rebellions, they can start at the down of the individual world, and they can grow in magnitude up to encompassing a whole system, but they can never encompass a constellation. Mm-hmm. The Most Highs, stand unmoved always. They're the ceiling of integrity. No, nothing chaotic can ever penetrate above the local system level. There's this definitive faithfulness to the constellation level. Yet these faithfuls of days, and isn't it interesting that, the faithfulness of our faithful of days is an exceptional example of ongoing faithfulness, and that he's always been here, he's never been rotated out. And that wasn't his choice, he was told to not be, to just stay. Someone on high could see what was potentially in play here.
Troubled waters. Well, it's too volatile, probably, right?
Yeah. I like that. To see him as a bridge over troubled waters. That's a great example of putting together chunks from all over in various spots in the book and really seeing what's between the lines here.
Now, so in the absence of rotation, what are we looking at here? Because there's something to be gained by the rotation, right? How that cross fertilization of all the seven superuniverses, that's not happening in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So, are they going to jump on that, or are we just supposed to do some deducing?
Yeah, that's why I wanted to really stress all these connections, because now for every question I answered, I just spawned.
Opened up.
That's the cool thing to do. It's like, look at all of the possible things you can speculate on now. The fact that you see this very suspicious oversight thing, it's like, well, how much else is going on like this? Where coincidentally, the chaos that we're experiencing might have an avenue that no one expects, because some very high councils of supreme perspective, you know, on paradise, saw the end from the beginning, and things will coincidentally come together in ways that no one anticipates, you know, even the authors.
Yeah.
It just really starts to open up all of that. All right, a little more here.
All that a union of days is to a creator son of a local universe, the faithfuls of days are to the Vorondadek sons who rule the constellations of the local creation. They are supremely devoted and divinely faithful to the welfare of their constellations of assignment, hence the name Faithfuls of Days. They act only as counselors. Never do they participate in administrative activities except upon the invitation of the constellation authorities. Neither are they directly concerned in the educational ministry to the pilgrims of ascension on the architectural training spheres surrounding a constellation headquarters. All such undertakings are under the supervision of the Vorondadek sons. All faithfuls of days functioning in the constellations of a local universe are under the jurisdiction of and report directly to the Union of Days. They do not have a far-flung system of intercommunication, being ordinarily self-limited to an inter-association within the limits of a local universe. Any faithful of days on duty in Nebadon can and does communicate with all others of his order on duty in this local universe.
And just,
there's a mechanism right there.
I mean, yeah, so you, I mean, again, in one sense, they're just repeating the bit about Trinity origin beings and having all of this potential connectivity. But see, being ordinarily self-limited, and you can, you know, you now know what the extraordinary instance would be is when, you know, we've got this rotation to different local universes or even different super universes potentially in play here. Okay, but normally they're limiting their footprint of totality attitude, basically. See, they're circumscribing how much they're aware of the total. You know, so their head isn't coursing, you know, with everything in the whole grand universe, you know. They just have the thoughts of the local universe, just that, in their minds.
So, I mean, the other constellations in Nebadon have rotating faithfuls communicating with this one who's not. Maybe there's some mechanism there.
Yeah. See, and, yeah, of course, I mean, we have no idea, I mean, how many of the constellations within Nebadon, though, I did have, you know, faithfuls of days that were rotated out, and, you know, and the last guy that was happened to be here got, you know, cemented here, you know, 2,000 years ago. But they're faithful, so they wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't be an issue. Let's see. I guess, yeah, that's all. That's all we need to, just noticing that ordinarily self-limited, you know, and again, I mean, look at the mastery there. You know, and they have that level of self-mastery to do that by nature. Yeah. Yeah. Again, that Trinity origin, in fact, like they stressed, you know, gives them an awful lot just right from the get-go. They don't have to go through some long, long rigmarole like we do to get enough self-mastery to be given some sort of a, you know, a definitive responsibility.
Yeah, that reminds me of she taught me third grade, but then she went to first grade and spent the rest of her career as a first grade teacher.
Uh-huh.
And that's a similar phenomenon, you know.
Not unlike the prince's staff. Mm-hmm. Think of the self-limiting, you know, of their teaching. They have to teach first grade, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years, very patiently. really, you know, and you're pushing it a bit. I mean, it's more like kind of high school. Their immediate job is to teach up to the high school level. You know, and that's why when you look at the 10 different councils of the prince's staff, you have the first five that are very directly kind of associated with what the planetary prince and his staff are up to prior to Adam and Eve. And then you have the second five that are thinking a little bit more long term. And the first of those is called the College of Revealed Religion. You know, again, see the contrast. It's kind of high school, and the planetary prince and his staff are up to, and then Adam and Eve come to really get going with college level stuff. Let's see. We are like the Union, aren't we?
Like the Union of Days on a universe headquarters. The faithfuls of Days maintain their personal residence on the constellation capitals, separate from those of the administrative directors of such realms. Their abodes are indeed modest in comparison with the homes of the veranda deck rulers of the constellations.
One thing you'll notice if you go read this on the constellation paper, and you'll see that a lot of these things are repeated there, just kind of interesting. Some of these things are almost said verbatim again. They really wanted to stress some of these issues and have them doubly expressed. I like that last little line about the modesty in comparison of their dwellings.
So it's kind of disappointing to realize that the phenomenon of trophy homes goes right on all the way up.
Hey, if you're on Most High, you know, this is not a presumption on your part that you have a mansion that you live in.
They probably want to get us prepared for what we're going to live in.
You're going to get a dormitory.
Yeah, maybe they're saying, if you want to be faithful like these guys and, you know, be humble and don't get too ahead of yourself in the self-aggrandizement category.
Take a
condo. All right.
The faithfuls of Days are the last link in the long administrative advisory chain, which reaches from the sacred spheres of the Universal Father near the center of all things to the primary divisions of the local universes. The Trinity origin regime stops with the constellations. No such paradise advisors are permanently situated on their component systems or on the inhabited worlds. These latter administrative units are wholly under the jurisdiction of beings native to the local universes. Presented by a divine counselor of Eversa.
Can anyone understand why? Why don't they go down lower? Is it a cosmic over-control issue, a coordinate action issue, or a totality attitude issue? Right. Right? I mean, the farther you go down, the more individuality is. You're going to cross a threshold where there just isn't any totality attitude to be directly interfacing with. I mean, that's why you can have rebellion, because there isn't a totality attitude, okay, present.
Like you said,
there's rogue individuality in full potential. Okay.
Veranda decks are the ceiling of integrity.
Rogue individuality, perfect.
Notice the hyphen. You know, just notice the little things. How precisely crafted. Look at that first sentence there. Administrative advisory. Okay, why, you know, what's the difference between saying administrative advisory and advisory administrative? When they say it that way, which is the root? Advisory. Yeah. It's the, the lower two levels are just advisory, and it's administrative above that. So this is the bottom-up point of view. Okay? It's not the top-down point of view, where it would be administrative with advisory tacked on. Okay? As you got down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Just think about, you know, they wanted you to when all is said and done, to think about it from your point of view. As you look up, it's advisory and then administrative above that. All right. Let's roll over into paper 19. And you'll see this first group we're going to talk about, Trinity Teacher Sons, is very appropriately juxtaposed with what we just read. Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to just keep on reading?
Sure. Paper 19, The Coordinate Trinity Origin Beings. This paradise group, designated the Coordinate Trinity Origin Beings, embraces the Trinity Teacher Sons, also classed among the Paradise Sons of God, three groups of high universe, super universe administrators, and the somewhat impersonal category of the inspired Trinity spirits. Even the Havona natives may properly be included in this classification of Trinity personalities, along with numerous groups of beings resident on Paradise. Those Trinity origin beings to be considered in this discussion are 1. Trinity Teacher Sons, 2. Perfectors of Wisdom, 3. Divine Counselors, 4. Universal Censors, 5. Inspired Trinity Spirits, 6. Havona Natives, and 7. Paradise Citizens. Accepting the Trinity Teacher Sons and possibly the Inspired Trinity Spirits, these groups are of definite numbers. Their creation is a finished and past event.
Okay, so basically just moving on with more of the story. You have that with these Trinity origin beings that we're discussing in these two papers. Obviously the primary ones they put first were the whole of days hierarchy. Now you have these that are coordinate, again, see, with, you know, so within the totality attitude of Mother Deity, Trinity Presence, they are coordinate. And we're bringing in, you know, it isn't just the Perfectors of Wisdom, Divine Counselors, Universal Censors, which you were already kind of anticipating. You know, you have things like Havona Natives and Paradise Citizens, which brings in an interesting new twist. It's like, wow, okay, now we're not talking about creators or even fancy administrators. Or, you know, it's like, we're down to just Joe, okay?
Yeah.
Joe Blow in Havona or on Paradise, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Bob from Havona.
Yeah. Bob from, you know, world number 16 trillion, you know. Okay, but, well, there's only a billion worlds in Havona, so that wouldn't work. But anyway. So, I mean, don't let that go unnoticed. That should catch your attention right here in the preface. It's like, oh, wait a minute, this is a little different. We're bringing in very much just creatures. Yeah, they're perfect creatures, but okay, something a lot more close to me now. Okay, that might have relevance to my understanding as I start reading. I want to keep that in mind. This is getting a lot closer to home now. Okay, you know, we're just going to go through them one at a time, and I'm sure it'll take us rest of the evening to do this first section. The Trinity Teacher Sons, as they'll mention, are described in greater detail in their immediate relevance to our ascension career and stuff and the planet's development when we get to the next paper about the Paradise Sons. Okay, but they're going to give us some upfront stuff here that's really interesting. Some things that you're very familiar with. You go, oh yeah, that's where that is in the book, in this next section. Let's see what we discover here.
1. The Trinity Teacher Sons. Of all the high orders of celestial personalities revealed to you, the Trinity Teacher Sons alone act in a dual capacity. By origin of Trinity nature, in function, they are almost wholly devoted to the services of divine sonship. They are the liaison beings who bridge the universe gulf between Trinity and dual origin personalities.
So just like the previous two sections, you know, at the end of the that first paragraph, notice how that first paragraph in those previous two sections, it was the real zinger foundational. Here it is again. And there's that little word liaison again. Okay, so of all the high orders of celestial personalities revealed to you, the Trinity teacher's sons alone act in dual capacity. So there's apparently others, but this is a very special type of being that acts in a dual capacity. It's a Trinity origin being, but it's called a Trinity teacher son. Okay, and they use the word liaison. Okay, we should all immediately recognize what they're talking about here, how this is possible. So in the case of the Union of Days, where they use that liaison word, we were thinking you have the root of the Father and the Paradise Trinity intimately touching within the nature of the Universal One of Infinity. But the Union of Days they spoke of as being very solidly, functioning as a Trinity expression. You know, they didn't use the word Son for the Union of Days. But they pointed to that Father-like reflection. So, we understood that as you can kind of think of, here's a being that's sort of in this Trinity domain and it has its face turned towards the Father's side and the Father is reflected off of that face. Well, what if you pushed the creation in that direction? What if you took that first step of the Union of Days and took another step in that direction, where you'd have this Trinity origin being who through the Father would get expressed as a son? Okay? Through that liaison fact. That's what these beings are. Okay? They're Trinity origin, but they're taking on a son-like expression because they are not just reflecting that liaison, they are going through it, expressing that liaison, they embody that liaison. They manifest in as a son-like fashion. In a son-like fashion, as if they were a child of the Father. An offspring of the Father. See, so, the very fact that the word liaison occurs here and just back in the Union Days, they're connecting these two paragraphs. And it's sort of, like I was saying, just you take one step with the Union of Days, you take another step in that same fashion, and you've got a Trinity teacher son. So they're like a sonified Union of Days in some sense. They're that kind of a fact brought to a more definitive son-like, father, reflecting nature. And now it's sort of that reflection made substance in a sense, brought to a real definitive focus expression. Okay, Trinity teacher son. And you notice they use that bridge, that word bridge. We ended up naturally coming to use that word too, and we were just talking about it. So that gulf, the universe gulf between Trinity and dual origin personalities, when you look at it from the universe side, sort of the side that's immediately in front of us, like if I'm here at the bottom of the, let me just, instead of doing it in this space, I'll bring it up. If I'm here in the fifth functional level of total deity, where deity engages me, creature identified deity, the sevenfold, okay, and I look to the first source in one direction all the way around, and I look to the Paradise Trinity the other direction all the way around, and I look to the two sides of the Universal One of Infinity, there couldn't be a bigger universe gulf. I'm sort of looking from one end to the other of the quote-unquote universe. But with how big is the gulf within the universe of one infinity? You know, the distance is zero. Okay. See, so what's from our vantage point seems, you know, a very difficult gap to bridge is not difficult at all within the nature of the universe of one infinity. There's an intimate connection there. And so something that embodies that intimacy within their intimacy, within their nature, it's a way of thinking about the different, you know, we have to evolve to eventually span that gulf. That gulf is eventuated, the bridging of that gulf is eventuated within this being. You know, they don't have to go through some long process and eventually they span that. Okay, the bridge is within, okay, it's eventuated within them. And you can understand how it can be, because what is extensively vast, you know, is intensively within the universe, one infinity, you know, one and the same thing. All right, so Trinity Teacher Sons are here, kind of a very interesting thing there. To think that through in detail, they embody an awful lot of that very mysterious, first functional level here, obviously, in order to understand how they can be what they are, this having, you know, just sort of dual character, they have to have embodied a lot of this really deep mystery of the domain of deity that's this most, you know, this diametrically removed from the deity that I'm going to be able to become immediately familiar with, the stuff that's directly engaging me. So that's kind of curious. And I'm going to be coming into very close association with them. They're going to teach me things. You know, they're going to be my teacher. They could teach me the depths of reality because they embody it. So again, so you can understand why they end up calling them. You know, I mean, there's teachers all over the place. I mean, Melchizedek's are teachers and blah, blah, blah. You know, why did they call these beings teacher in their name? Why? I mean, why not, you know, why are they being sort of elevated over others? There must be a foundational teacherness potential within them that even a Melchizedek, say, doesn't have. Yeah. They have a totality attitude, like in a very special way embodied within them, that Melchizedek or other teachers don't have. Okay, so now you kind of understand. See what you know? Why the Son is there? Why the teacher is there? And then of course the Trinity is pretty obvious. There's a Trinity origin. That's why that's there. Okay, at least you can understand it now. So you have a means of having that name have meaning. Remember what we read? They've tried to give names that have meaning. They're not just meaningless sequences of words. Right, right. Find the meaning so that the truth of the revelation is flowing through you. I mean, otherwise it's just an endless bunch of facts that doesn't change the way you live your life. You've got to figure out how this section that we're about to read changes the way you live your life. Otherwise, you have no relationship to the truth. Okay, it's just a bunch of facts, meaningless facts. So that's the challenge. Your life has to be irreversibly changed after you come into relationship with the truth that flows through this next section, and every section of the book, of course. That's the challenge in front of us. All right?
While the stationary sons of the Trinity are of completed numbers, the teacher sons are constantly increasing. What the final number of teacher sons will be, I do not know. I can, however, state that at the last periodic report to Uversa, the Paradise records indicated 21,001,624,821 of these sons in service.
It looks suspiciously like 7 times 3 there, you know, happening to get to 21. But they aren't, you know, they don't give us any clues about whether or not, you know, there's much validity to that. But that looks suspicious that there's kind of a sevenfold embodied in that to a degree.
But it's apparently increasing.
Yeah, and it's increasing all the time.
By sevens.
And that's just in Uversa?
Show off.
No, the report to Uversa that there's that many in service in the
Paradise,
Grand Universe.
Paradise
Records. So yeah.
In total.
Yeah.
Okay.
These beings are the only group of sons of God revealed to you whose origin is in the Paradise Trinity. They range the central and super universes, and an enormous core is assigned to each local universe. They also serve the individual planets, as do the other Paradise Sons of God. Since the scheme of the Grand Universe is not fully developed, large numbers of Teacher Sons are held in the reserves on Paradise, and they volunteer for emergency duty and unusual service in all divisions of the Grand Universe, on the lone worlds of space, in the local and super universes, and on the worlds of Havona. They also function on Paradise, but it will be more helpful to postpone your detailed consideration, their detailed consideration, until we come to the discussion of the Paradise Sons of God.
Yeah, like I said, that's coming up. All pretty straightforward there. You know, just notice the lone worlds of space. Yeah. All the way down to that very definitive individuality. And totality attitude is something that you're reaching up to. It's not something that's automatically there. You'd better take delight in cultivating, bringing the totality attitude within you, because it's not just naturally oozing in your pores, you know, because you're bathed in it. It's up there. You need to reach up and bring it down to within you. You're on a lone world. You're very much an individuality. Okay, now maybe just one little preface. So, they're not really going to tell us about Trinity Teacher Sons. So what are they going to do? They're going to give us a foretaste of the teaching to come. Okay.
In this connection, however, it may be noted that Teacher Sons are the supreme coordinating personalities of Trinity origin. In such a far-flung universe of universes, there is always great danger of succumbing to the error of the circumscribed viewpoint, to the evil inherent in a segmentalized conception of reality and divinity.
Yep, see? Something about why the revelation is in my lap. Danger.
He also mentioned these guys in connection with the emergency service.
Okay. Maybe just a little reflection on you know, how masterfully they craft that. See, the error of a circumscribed viewpoint. So when you know, when you see where you know, you have error and evil, you know, you should be immediately thinking about, you know, fact figment, truth, error, goodness, evil, you know, what's going on there. Okay, so the error of the circumscribed viewpoint. So I may have a grip on some goodness, but I have way too small a grip on facts, way too circumscribed, to properly associate with that goodness, and I'm going to get error. I need more science to go with my religion, okay? Or there is not going to be truth. There's going to be error. Okay, and you know, and when I say science, you know, that doesn't mean you're going to, you know, study calculus, okay, and rationalize things with it.
Logical.
Okay? You need, you know, to work on that direct, definitive relationship to facts in the outer life. Okay, you can't have a really circumscribed outer life viewpoint, or error will result. It's just the way it is. The evil inherent in a segmentalized conception of reality and divinity. Of course, it's the same way. If you have, all you have is this very individuated, segmentalized, you know, understanding, don't have much unity in play, you know, invariably there's going to be, you're going to give non-unity form in your mind, you know, that's evil. Okay, so so the first thing that, you know, obviously we're going to talk about philosophy here. This is a, they're going to, you know, they're teaching philosophy, of course, what they're teaching. And they're going to give us a little taste of that. They want you to get your philosophic juices flowing. And they start you out by getting you thinking about the threefold actuality and how you understand fact, truth, goodness. Okay?
Vitamins. Oh, I get it.
All right. So,
for example, the human mind would ordinarily crave to approach the cosmic philosophy portrayed in these revelations by proceeding from the simple and the finite to the complex and the infinite, from human origins to divine destinies, but that path does not lead to spiritual wisdom. Such a procedure is the easiest path to a certain form of genetic knowledge, but at best it can only reveal man's origin. It reveals little or nothing about his divine destiny.
If you try to understand the fifth epical revelation from a bottom-up point of view, okay, you know, such a procedure is, you know, is going to give you a certain form of genetic knowledge, okay, but spiritual wisdom, that requires you cultivating a top-down point of view. And what's the fundamental thing? I mean, you notice that only can reveal man's origin. Well, you know, in the existential sense, the Father, you know, is the individuality of the parts. He individuated me, initiated the existence of me as an individual. Okay, I can understand that from a bottom-up point of view. That closeness between the bottom-up point of view and the Father. You know, and why the Father has been revealed, this is the fifth time now. Okay, but it's the first time that the mother has been revealed, because they're trying to get us to bring in the top-down point of view in combination with our bottom-up. We've had lots of declaration that our bottom-up point of view was unity-like and that we're spiritual. They're saying no. That's a false exaltation of individuality. You're calling spirit. You know, actual spiritual wisdom, it's only acquired top-down, from a top-down point of view. And the only way that you can really begin to have that is having another fundamental overarching facet of deity in your lexicon, the mother. Right? You know, who's the source of wisdom? You know, where did I get my spirit of wisdom from? Mm-hmm. I didn't get it from the Creator Son. Mm-hmm. You know, when I see Him, I see the Father. I got it from the Creative Mother Spirit, right? See, so that's, see, so here, you know, you've seen the threefold actuality, you know, the bidirectional perception, both bottom up and top down. what else do they have?
Even in the study of man's biologic evolution on Urantia, there are grave objections to the exclusive historic approach to his present-day status and his current problems. The true perspective of any reality problem, human or divine, terrestrial or cosmic, can be had only by the full and unprejudiced study and correlation of three phases of universe reality: origin, history, and destiny. The proper understanding of these three experiential realities affords the basis for a wise estimate of the current status.
Oh, yeah, that's where that sentence is in the book about origin, history, and destiny. Wait a minute. It's in the section on coordinate Trinity origin beings in the Trinity Teacher Son section. No wonder I couldn't remember where it was. I was looking for it in the first five papers about the Father. Something like that. Okay, so let's notice some things here. there are grave objections. Okay, now, is that like the noun grave? You know, like where you bury you? No, that's the adjective grave. Very different. That's like gravity. Gravity and this grave are the same word. Gravity. Well, that thing that pulls me down. There are grave objections. You're going to find yourself pulled down to the bottom of your individuality viewpoint and biased because of it. Okay? They just encouraged us to have the top down. See how they're building this? There's grave objections to trying to understand everything from the individuality viewpoint, from the bottom-up viewpoint. You know, you're going to find yourself down in the bottom of the well of ignorance about the nature of yourself and the universe. Gravity will do that to you. The true perspective. Okay, so origin, history, and destiny. Notice what they say after that. The proper understanding of these three experiential realities, not existential realities, experiential realities. Oh, the mother, the overarching facet of experiential deity, the mother. I'm supposed to understand myself in a very different way than I've been trying to understand myself. I'm in a paper about Trinity origin beings. And they said right in the preface that some of these beings are creatures, not that different from me, Havona natives and paradise citizens. Ah, I have an origin in the Trinity, a history through the mother, and a destiny in the all are. Okay, these are three experiential realities about me. Okay, I have an origin in the Paradise Trinity, a history in the mother, and a destiny in the all are. That's the truth that's now been revealed to mankind for the first time. Very different than anything mankind has ever thought. And why is it an emergency to reveal this to us? Why is the word danger in the first paragraph that started this little lesson in philosophy here? Okay. Well, what if I approach this the way, history would tend to bias me to approach it? What if I say, well, you know, I have an origin in the Father and a history through the Son that leads to a destiny in the I Am. I Am. What's the danger? Okay.
Self-aggrandizement.
Yeah. Okay. So, origin in the Trinity. Trinity is not a person. Your origin begins impersonal. Up out of the soil, up out of the humus you come. The most impersonal of things. What's actualized out of the unqualified absolute? Dirt. Okay? Up out of the humus you come. Okay? Origin in the Paradise. What of all the facets of deity, there's only one facet of deity that directly embraces the totality of reality, lowercase I infinity. Which facet of deity is it? The Paradise Trinity. Okay? The humus up from which you come is only directly embraced by the Paradise Trinity. You have origin in the Trinity. You have a history through the mother, like the mother influence dominating your ascension, your history up through the local universe. Okay, I get to the Isle of Paradise and I go out God the Mother revealing, and okay, and I have a destiny. The all are that look at the humility, okay? I start out from an impersonal origin. Very slowly, I begin to bring little tiny hints of personality into the humus out of which I well, okay? Very slowly. And when all is said and done, I'm in an infinite all are. There's nothing but humility there. And no danger. Okay? But if I misunderstand my origin, history, and destiny by wrongly misunderstanding, wrongly, you know, wrap my mind around this and think, I have an origin in the Father. So I start out full-blown absolute personality.
Yeah.
Okay? And I'm this definitive Son expression to the universe. And I am. It's my destiny. Okay? One leads to perfect humility. The other leads to a very dangerous potential of arrogance and self-righteousness. Okay. This is the danger of knowing so much about our relationship to the Father without knowing about the Mother. That we will misinterpret this. Okay. Our origin is in the Paradise Trinity, and our history is through the Mother, and our destiny is in the all are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're an experiential reality, not an existential reality.
Whenever it comes and however it comes, the sixth epical revelation is going to really have to expand on the Mother revelation, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, think about the philosophy that the magisterial son will teach us. Yeah. Yeah. He comes as the philosophic uplifter, the revealer of holistic thought, not just unity biased or individuality biased, yeah, but the triunity.
Yeah.
Right.
Those descriptions, segmented, segmentalized, circumscribed, those are anything but all. Right?
So there's a proper understanding and there's an improper understanding. You know, and they both leveraged off, they both, you know, leverage off of, you know, what perhaps is an unrecognized sequence of three words, origin, history, destiny. You know, there's a proper interpretation and an improper one. Okay. And so I mean, I hope that, okay, why is that sentence that is so oft repeated, why on earth is it in paper 19 about Trinity origin beings?
Yeah.
Because that's starting to talk about me and you. We're Trinity origin beings. That's who we are. Okay? You bring a Trinity origin being like a Havona native into existence by fiat, or you can slowly coalesce that Trinity origin being through time and space like us. But when all is said and done and I'm standing on the Isle of Paradise and I'm inducted into the core of the finality, I swear an oath of allegiance to the Paradise Trinity, my origin.
All
right.
Okay? That's another huge clue.
Not the Father.
Who you take your oath to, that's right. Huge.
I am a humble part of an infinite all are. I'm not a dangerous, self-righteous I am, like Lucifer.
I am an all are.
Mm-hmm. All right.
My notes.
What else do they give us here?
When the human mind undertakes to follow the philosophic technique of starting from the lower to approach the higher, whether in biology or theology, it is always in danger of committing four errors of reasoning.
You know, there's always the potential of being falsely dominated. Remember, that's what the danger of error. Okay. If I try to do it all bottom-up point of view, see, they just said it directly there, lower to approach the higher.
Number one, it may utterly fail to perceive the final and completed evolutionary goal of either personal attainment or cosmic destiny.
Okay, I mean, then we kind of spoke to that one. You know, what human, let alone your Rancho Book reader, has talked about the all are? Right? It's all, this is the only way to get to the all are, okay? To avoid this first error, okay? To not start thinking I am like Lucifer did. Your destiny and the destiny of the cosmos as well, like saying the personal attainment and cosmic, it all is all are. Remember, when all is said and done in the endless cycles of eternity, the beings and the things are all one, all are. Mm-hmm. Pattern and personality are all the same. It's all one fact. It's all are. Not just all of us are, but all are. All ultimatons and all beings are in a perfect cosmic system of infinite scope.
There's something in me that's just rattled by that. The term all are.
Yeah, your individuality is rattled by that.
Yeah, so not only may you utterly fail, but, you know, history has shown that,
reliably fail.
Could you talk about, when we talk about unity, associativity, and individuality, that when we reach paradise, when we get to Havona, it reverses, and paradise is where we develop that individuality, and compare that with the all are. Concept.
Right. In order, if your ultimate destiny, trans-ultimate destiny, you know, your co-absolute destiny, is to be part of an infinite all-are, you need to be seriously individuated, okay?
Yeah.
So that you aren't diffused into that. Yeah. And of course, if everyone wasn't, absolutely individuated, and everyone diffused, you'd be back to the I am. You'd be back to one thing.
Yeah, the ocean.
Okay? So, you're getting this relationship with unity, and then upon that foundation that you've acquired up through the local and super universes, you now build a new individuality in the central universe that can withstand intimate association with full-blown unity, not watered-down unity, not quasi-individuated unity, like even the one super universe has, but full-on unity, and you do not diffuse to the four winds. You stand unmoved as an absolutized individuality on the Isle of Paradise. And the flip side of that is, you know, when you go out, God the Mother revealing, you know, as you've, you know, so definitively individuated, you know, think of your boundaries as coming into this solid nucleated fact. As those boundaries sweep in, they accumulate and now rigidly internalized nature. You've swept up the cosmos into your inner nature. You are part of mother likeness. You've acquired that mother likeness as you've brought your boundaries in, just like she will. Right now she's spread over all of Nebanon. You know, one day she will coalesce into a point. And as she does, she sweeps up all of that mother likeness and nucleates it into a point, you know, internalized within her. Or the universal mother, you know, sweeps up the total finite, nucleates it with him.
I had this really wonderful aha moment, and that was when I realized, if I go to my jewelry box and give you my diamond, you have my diamond and I don't have it anymore. That's material. But if I give you a piece of truth, you have it and I still have it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the kind of a literal cosmic expression of that. Anything that is actually realityized in me is reflected in the Supreme. You know? So the whole has it and I have it. Mm-hmm. It's never just mine.
It even multiplies.
And because the whole has it, you can partake of it.
Mm-hmm. All have.
Yeah.
But there's still the musician who is coalesced, mm-hmm. placing that music into the whole.
Yeah. And yeah, just you can see all the analogies you can work with, you know, like this definitive individuation that you acquire through the central universe. Now you are a solid, pure note. If someone plucks you, you know, it's not like plucking a wet noodle, okay? You're a taut string of pure tone, okay?
There are no noodles in Hawaii.
Right now, we're way too mushy, okay? We need to be very rigidly individuated so that we can be one of those infinite pure tones in the infinite all are. All right, so that whole destiny about the infinite all are, what's number two?
It may commit the supreme philosophical blunder by oversimplifying cosmic, evolutionary, experiential reality, thus leading to the distortion of facts, to the perversion of truth, and to the misconception of destinies.
Oh, did you notice these first two begin with it?
Yeah.
I thought it was about me. I am. Why is it saying it? I don't like to be called it.
Trying to separate you from your behavior.
See? When the human mind undertakes to follow, right. It may. Right. Oh, yeah, that other consecration.
Right.
Not only do I have to consecrate my will, the perfect will of God the Father, that's the I part, but I need to consecrate my mind, it, to the universal harmony. Okay. I need to master that self, okay, so it doesn't commit these errors of reasoning. Okay, and if I haven't taken delight in cultivating to work on that second consecration, I will be committing these errors of reasoning. Okay, until the fifth epical revelation, it's pretty much a given that these errors of reasoning are universal. Every person who picks up this book and starts studying it for decades is committing these errors of reasoning unless they've taken delight in cultivating otherwise.
It says always in danger.
Right?
It doesn't say sometimes or maybe. Yeah, always
once
in danger.
A while.
Okay, so oversimplifying. Yeah. How much time, you know, are we spending on trying to understand this incredible complexity that's in my lap here? Okay? Because we don't want to oversimplify the cosmos. The potential for an infinite all are is a complicated potential. Okay, it takes 2,000 pages to even remotely begin to suggest it. Okay, distortion of facts to the perversion of truth. If I don't point to the horizon of the all are, if I turn that 180 degrees around, perversion, where does the finger pointing? Yeah, right at me, in my self-righteousness. It's misconception of destinies.
Yeah.
Miss, wrong. Okay. That, you know, I don't want to give badness form in my mind. I don't want to be evil. Well, unless you've taken delight in cultivating, there will be a wrong conception. That's evil. You will give non-unity form in your mind. And we, you know, we just thought, I mean, there's the unity of the all are, or there's me. Okay. All the wrongness of that. I am, screw you. Okay.
That works.
Well, just I am, screw you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if everybody did that, you have the all aren't.
Yes. Oh. Right. A vast all aren't, exactly. Okay, number three.
The study of causation is the perusal of history. But the knowledge of how a being becomes does not necessarily provide an intelligent understanding of the present status and true character of such a being.
Yeah, that's the emphasis on how. We all know that, you know, in this materialistic scientific age, even people who want to think of themselves as spiritual are really stuck in the process and the how. We've just been bathed in it from the time we were born. We don't know any better. We've forgotten to ask why. Okay, like we were initially given some inertia towards. You know, a parent doesn't encourage the child to ask why. The kid just starts saying why. Okay, came from mom and dad that goes beyond the biologic mom and dad. Okay, okay. So, you know, the why. Okay. In order to have an intelligent understanding of the present status and true character of a being. Why do you have value? Is the answer to be found in the how of the process of your development? You will carefully study the process of your development, and it gets to a certain number of molecules, and then it has value. No. Has nothing to do with the number of molecules. Okay? There's no difference in the value of an unborn child and a 50-year-old adult. It has nothing to do with how. Okay? You have value because of what you're becoming. Okay? Because of your potential destiny in the infinite all are. Okay? The philosophic chaos of our culture, see, embodies all this. Yeah. And the most innocent suffer.
Four, history alone fails adequately to reveal future development, destiny. Finite origins are helpful, but only divine causes reveal final effects. Eternal ends are not shown in time beginnings. The present can be truly interpreted only in the light of the correlated past and future.
In other words, take delight in cultivating an eternity perspective. Yeah. Don't get stuck in your animalism, you know, in that in-the-moment bias. Bring in the correlated past and future. Eternalize your consciousness. All right, so, yeah, I mean, you know, you obviously, you know, we could spend 2 hours talking about the ramifications of those 4 points. But, start working on it yourself. See if you can think of different ways of summing up or giving an example of each of those 4 points. And be ruthless with your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. Know that it's a given that we begin in these errors. Don't beat yourself up over that. Just begin the process of changing that fact. Reforming it, the human mind.
Therefore, because of these and for still other reasons, do we employ the technique of approaching man and his planetary problems by embarkation on the time-space journey from the infinite, eternal, and divine paradise source and center of all personality reality and all cosmic existence.
And yet, with 2,000 pages that, you know, insanely, ploddingly go top down, it's sad to record, most of the interpretation is bottom up. You know? And even to avoid the possibility of being biased into a top down viewpoint, maybe we should read the book backwards. Part four, part three, part two, part one. Because it just feels more natural. Okay, how hard are they trying to get us to start to have a top-down viewpoint? And how much is mankind, the handful that's found in the Urantia Book, resisting their best efforts to get us to discover the Trinity and the Mother that can only be recognized when you begin to see the universe from a top-down point of view? Okay? And then to make the stunning discovery, oh my goodness, I am a Trinity origin being. Eh? I always thought the Trinity origin being stuff was the most removed from immediate relevancy to me. No. The fifth epical revelation, a thought that's never been had and is now revealed, is just that. That's the fifth epical revelation. That's why Origin, History, Destiny, oft quoted, is here, not up in, you know, of the Father papers. It's right here. Okay. You know, you can see we have a big journey ahead of us, really, to reform and really start to take on the fifth epical revelation, to stop putting old new wine in old wineskins, okay? I mean, what's been revealed is so different than what history has taught me about myself. You know, and I've got to be careful to not just use this to just aggrandize the monotheistic God and the winged things. Okay? This is trying to give me something very, very different than that. Matter of fact, it's 180 degrees around different from that. It's top down, not bottom up. Okay? I'm a Trinity origin being, and my origin is in the Paradise Trinity. My history is through the Mother. My destiny is in the infinite all are. That's me, an experiential creature. Let's take a moment to reflect on that.